FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
And welcome. You're listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's Kerry Lutz. The date is January 27th, 2015. All sorts of things going on in the world, but you're probably aware of it. We're looking at the rally in precious metals, particularly gold and silver. Looked like it was pulling back, but today, gold, as we're speaking, it's noontime. Gold's up $1,160 the ounce. Silver is doing pretty well today as well. It's up back 14 cents. It's trading at $18.04, back over the $18 mark. Where it's heading, nobody knows. But the fact that it rallied again when it broke off the $1,318 mark, you know, gives one pause for thought. But more importantly is what's going on with this economy? Where is it heading? And for that, I've got Jim Mascara on with us again. You're probably familiar with his book, Escaping Oz. It's actually his recent book, which is Escaping Oz, Navigating the Crisis. And it just came out recently. Jim, how's that book been going?
Well, pretty good. I just released it officially last week, so hopefully it'll gain some traction. I think the books like this probably tend to gain more traction as things in the economy and in the financial markets worsen.
Yeah, well, you know, this economy, look, we talked about it before, all this talk about recovery, all that stuff. Well, you know my thoughts on it. What are your thoughts on the so-called recovery?
Well, you know, the economic recovery was based on the creation of more debt, you know, at the federal level and really a lot of central bank action. And really, this is something that your listeners should not overlook. Central banks, the Fed, and governments, they don't create wealth. And that's a very important point to understand. The public sector, you know, the government tends to create some feelings of economic confidence by, you know, pointing to improving statistics like the unemployment numbers and GDP. But economic balance sheets aren't repaired that quickly if you look back to what happened in 2008. Now, much of our recovery that we've experienced, let's say since the bottom in 2009, has been felt in financial assets, which has been the primary beneficiary of all this money creation. This is what I refer to in the book as these investment cones. So these cones tend to attract credit, or another way of looking at it is newly created money. When there's not much friction in creating that credit, it tends to flow these financial cones rather easily. And one of the problems with doing this is that there are many secondary and unintended effects from what government and central banks tend to do.
Right. And a lot of people have written about this. So tell us why you wrote the book, where you saw the need for it.
Well, you know, I released the first book a couple of years after the main shocks of 2008. Those shocks really left the public kind of dazed and confused. We were in the throes of what, in the book, I refer to stage 2 and 3 of a financial bubble's anatomy. You know, at that point, you know, the public's basically trying to find out who the guilty parties are. You know, governments and central banks, they feel the need to step in and then restore public confidence. And that was done through, you know, fiscal deficits and then pretty massive intervention in the credit markets. We saw the stock market rebound, and by many statistical measures, you know, the economy appeared to improve. But the economy never really, what I'll call, resolved, you know, the ills of the previous bubble, since it was never really allowed to deflate. I use the metaphor of a blimp, you know, that those airships that circulate around sporting events as, you know, the amount of credit inflation that we experienced. So some air got let out of that blimp, but then the wizards basically tried to reinflate it. And in fact, it's a larger blimp than it was before. So the catharsis that you think would be necessary at the financial bubble really didn't occur. So the new book really addresses some of the events that have occurred during the economic recovery and that why the foundation of the economy as we see it today and the financial markets is not as strong as it may appear. I put a little bit more discussion in there about the Federal Reserve, and I presented a bearish case for the stock market. But one thing that I do want to point out that I deviated a little bit from things financial and economic is a discussion on government and what people need to consider its impacts are, I should say, on the economy. You know, the discussion on government is really foundational, since I believe anyway that politics and economics have greatly intersected and will continue to do so until we resolve the crisis. And you cannot separate politics and economics in the years ahead. So essentially what I try to do with the book is try to present a fundamental description of the crisis, not talk about assigning specific blame or dealing in conspiracy theories. It's really foundational. I talk about, you know, what some of the foundations of the crisis are and kind of take you through time to where we are today, and really some of the things that people need to do individually, but then also collectively in terms of, you know, trying to, again, navigate through this crisis.
Yeah. So we're still in this crisis, to summarize what you're saying. You know, while, as it's been said many times in the press, the 1%, the super wealthy and the extremely wealthy have done pretty well during the crisis, but the middle class has really gotten chewed up and spit out, haven't they?
Yeah. And that's something that I talk about. I talk about income and wealth inequality, And not so much in the same way that that Thomas Piketty does, because I know he has some solutions, I guess, for that. And I don't really talk about imposing any solutions, because some of those things, or let me rephrase, the income inequality and wealth inequality is a direct, I mean, very directly correlated to credit cycles. I show a graph in the book that shows really, really close parallel between income inequality and stock market levels. And you will see that once the stock market reaches its bearish low, you will not see the same degree of income inequality, and you won't see the same degree of wealth inequality. But there's no question that you know, the upper crust, if you will, has accrued the most benefits, you know, since 2009. So it's the Wall Street versus Main Street thing. What I'm very cautious about is, you know, potentially imposing, you know, any draconian rules or taxes, anything that would upset, I guess, what people's view is of capitalism, because now there may even be a tax on capitalism as a whole because of income inequality. You know, my view is let the market resolve itself, and then you'll find income inequality, which will always exist, by the way. There'll be always some degree of it, but it'll return to a more historically normal level, which it's certainly not right now.
So if I can paraphrase, basically the government's policies have created a bubble, or have paved the way for financial assets, the stock market, and let's say trophy real estate in New York, Miami, LA, the go-go markets, as well as art collectibles, has created bubbles there and caused them to go up dramatically, which has increased the wealth of that 1%, and effectively the very thing that the government is decrying, depending how you say it, is the very thing that they have helped create.
That's right. I mean, and I would add more than just government. I mean, we can't separate central banking action from everything that's occurred. So, I mean, and I talk about them just generally, and I refer to them as the wizards. And I'm glad you brought up the point about art, because in the opening chapter of the book, I talk about, again, that chasm that exists between Wall Street and Main Street. Well, you know, that upper crust is doing so well that recently, I want to say late last year, there was a piece of art that sold for $3 million, and the name of the piece of art was called Three Urinals. And yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. People urinate. And so your thought probably is, oh, this is a painting of three urinals. And that's not true. What the piece of art was literally three urinals. Mm-hmm. And that piece of art went for $3 million. And so, I mean, that kind of shows you where you are with respect to financial bubbles. I mean, in this case, it's, you know, it's collectible bubble, where there's so much credit that's been created that it gets directed towards a piece of art in quotes like this.
And yeah, so it's kind of hard to separate now the Federal Reserve from the government and vice versa. You know what I'm saying? Because the policies of one follow the other and vice versa. I don't want to get into saying that the financial sector owns the government, but, you know, the belief, the allegations are certainly there. And, you know, it's who's the government working for? You know all the arguments, but Hey, when we return, let's talk about solutions, magical solutions. Is there one? Can the president, Congress, Federal Reserve provide the ultimate bailout? And what would it look like if the market was actually functioning properly on the Financial Survival Network?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Just when you thought gold and silver were never going higher, they're back again. All the experts and naysayers have been telling you to invest in stocks, but gold is back over $1,300 an ounce, and silver has broken through $18, and they look like they're going much higher. And when it comes to buying gold, silver, or diamonds, I go to Cloud Hard Assets. Tom Cloud has been in the business over 38 years. Call him now at 800-247-2812. Tom's service is outstanding, and you can buy with complete confidence. Order today, and you'll have your metal in your hands in 10 days or less. Tom takes the guesswork out of what to buy, and you'll buy at the lowest possible prices. And as a special to FSN listeners, you'll get free shipping and insurance. So call him today at 800-247-2812. That's 800-247-2812. Or find him on the web at cloudhardassets.com and tell them Kerry sent you.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
And if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Financial Survival Network. We've got Jim Mosquera with us. He's author of a new book, Escaping Oz, Navigating the Crisis. And Jim, so market-based solutions seem to be the last thing that get tried in any crisis because, look, politicians don't get paid, don't get elected, I should say, to sit back and wait for the market to work its magic. And the current generation, past several generations of citizens here, we're not brought up on market-based solutions. In fact, quite the contrary, economics texts espouse Keynesian solutions, the Piketty's of the world were really raised on John Kenneth Galbraith, John Maynard Keynes, and really on statism and the emerging Mises, Austrian economists really predicted all of everything that's happening now, have written about it extensively. Their only failing is, Jim, that they can't provide a timetable, or they didn't provide a timetable for what happened, because nobody can provide timetables for bubbles when bubbles are going to burst.
Yeah, that's right. And, if you look at what sort of a market solution to these problems might look like, the market, in the absence of any additional debt created, would basically revalue all these assets to a sustainable price level, which it's not right now. Process-wise, it occurs through a, let's call it a structural reordering, if you will, a restructuring. Default is another part of the process, as well as debt retirement. In the book, I talk about some of the strong demographic forces at work that are going to force some of this action no matter what. A few years ago, I read a book that was called Where Good Ideas Come From. And one of the things I found really interesting in the book was that the author discussed how the human brain has an interconnectedness about it that exceeds the network that we know as the Internet by manyfold. And one of the things he pointed out in the book was that ideas tend to emanate from larger, more interconnected networks. And that's really what the market is. It's a very large interconnected network. And one of the things he talked about was it's not that the network itself has some innate wisdom, but that someone within the network has that wisdom and then, that it can spread likewise. The market is that ultimate economic network from where ideas emerge. But when we have economic decisions, emanating from legislative bodies like Congress or executive bodies, president, or central bank policies, Fed, or fill in another central bank from somewhere else in the world. All of them I would refer to in the wizard category. We lose that network effect, and it's really impossible for the wizards to know what a market wants to do. And I coined some economic laws that discussed what should happen in a market and My economic law number 4 says markets allow people to satisfy themselves by satisfying others. So what's important about this is if you look at any participant in an economy, they act on their own behalf, so what's best for them, in a manner that meets the satisfaction of others doing the same thing, so acting on their own behalf. And so when you get third parties, if you will, like the wizards, intervening, it's very, very hard. I mean, I should say it's impossible for them to know exactly how the market should behave. And so they're trying to dictate the behavior. And so they're kind of basically messing up that interconnectedness of that network effect that author was talking about.
Right. And yeah, but how do we get the politicians and the people, the population, to trust the market? I mean, we've just gone so far in the opposite direction that really there's just this widespread distrust of the market, and nobody seems to trust it anymore, Jim.
I'm so glad you asked that question, because one of the things that I added to this book that I didn't talk about in the other one was I deviated a little bit, and I mentioned earlier that I started talking about government, and I think that this whole issue of government is really, really foundational, because we need to really think about what government should do. And by that, I actually took people all the way back to the Constitution and look at what the functions of government are. And I think we've gotten really a long way away from that. Let's add the Federal Reserve to that same mix. You know, the Federal Reserve, and again, I realize there's a number of people that would suggest that they shouldn't exist at all. And there's some sound reasoning behind that. But let's say that we go back to their creation, you know, 1913, and why they were created in the first place. You know, essentially they were created to be a bank of banks, or excuse me, a bank for banks. And that's not what they do today. I mean, they even espouse that their goal is to, you know, hit certain inflation rates and protect unemployment, protect the stock market. You know, all of those things are not things that they were intended to do. So, you know, to answer your question is, how do you get this recognition? One, you have to talk about this issue, and hopefully people will listen to your radio show and become more educated. But I truly believe that this country is in desperate need of a viable third party to be elected, you know, at the national and state level. And I don't know what the name of that third party is, just call it an independent party, that can educate their electorate along these lines. Because right now, it doesn't matter who you elect, whether it was a Republican or Democrat that got elected in 2008 to now, and I use that as a reference point because of the economic crisis, you would have had the same outcome. And so I think it's important to have elected leaders that can represent these, just call them alternative views. Let's just go back to more fundamental views and really propose an alternate way of looking at things, which you really haven't had in this country for a long time.
Yeah. And so we need to kind of go back to basics, if you will. And, you know, back to economic education, of which there's very little basic economic education here, right?
And you know what's interesting though is when we talk about economic education, the things that I always talk about is really that it's not that there needs to be like this whole big amount of education and trying to educate the populace on a bunch of economic theory. I mean, if markets are allowed to operate naturally, and really, I mean, a lot of what I see from the Austrian economists is what I just call natural law, just natural operations of market. Like I stated in my economic law number 4, I mean, anybody is out there, they're trying to satisfy their own needs, but they can only do that by satisfying other people. And that it's just a very basic, fundamental way of looking at things. So I think personally that just complicated endlessly, you know, for probably decades and probably a couple of generations, and it doesn't need to be that complicated.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And the other thing that you said at the beginning is that the government can never create, can never create wealth. They can only take it from somebody and give it to somebody else, right?
Yeah, and more importantly, though, Kerry, they were never, it was never intended for government to do any of that. That's not what their role is. And I think that people just need to look back on that and say, okay, if this is what government was supposed to do, do I want them doing all these other things? And if you do want them doing all these other things, then understand that here are some of the effects of that, and it costs us for government to do some of these things. And we have a really, really wide disconnect in this country where some of the things we expect government to do, but we're not willing to pay for those things. So if we're not willing to pay for those things, then we need to simplify or pare back what we want government to do. If we want government to do those things, then we need to reprioritize how we spend government money. And I just don't think that discussion ever really occurs.
Right. There's no free lunch, as they say, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, the fact that no debate has taken place on the proper form and course of government is really a problem, isn't it?
I think so. And again, until you get a party out there to really espouse this, you know, discuss it honestly, and maybe in a less political sense, I think you're still going to have some of these problems.
Right. But third parties notoriously have not done well in the U.S. They've more or less been spoilers for one of the other two parties, right?
Well, I mean, the last, you know, third party run that you had of significant import was in 1992 with Henry Ross Perot. You know, he garnered 18% of the popular vote, which is, I mean, really astounding if you think about that. But to your point, I mean, he altered the course of the election because he probably drew a lot of Republican candidates, you know, away from Bush, right? And so you had a Democrat elected. So my point is that, and again, I've been kind of thinking in my mind that some election, maybe 2020, you would have a viable third party emerge. And again, I'm not saying win the presidency, but, you know, perhaps win some seats in Congress. I mean, you have third parties that coalesce in other countries all the time, right? So that it would be nothing unusual to have a third party. It would be unusual in this country, probably, of course, but not with respect to other countries.
Great point. So, hey, to get either your latest book or the one before, where's the best place to find it, and do you have a website?
If you go to escapingoz.com, that's escapingoz.com, you'll find information for the new book. There's a book trailer there, excerpt of the book, some information about myself, biographical, et cetera. There's also a link there that shows some different places where you can buy it. Obviously, Amazon, CreateSpace. If you want an autographed copy, you can buy it from my website. So there's a number of different places you can certainly purchase it.
All right. Excellent. And you'll find the link, as always, on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter. You'll also get notified of our latest webinar, which there will be one coming up shortly. Jim, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Kurt.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Every week, the show is growing. Would you like to be a part of it? Then go to clubfsn.com and help support us with $1, $2, $5, or $10 a month and get a host of premium content with newsletters dropped into your mailbox, free books, private audio clips, webinars, and much more. Then join clubfsn.com. If you want to get ahead of the trend and ensure your family's financial security before it's too late, go to clubfsn.com and sign up.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next. FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.